This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Some say if they hadn't joined the Navy, they'd be in jail or in some kind of trouble. Most come from middle and working class families. For 6 months at a time, they share meals, bathrooms, and danger. But maybe the most surprising thing about the crew of the supercarrier USS Nimitz is the combination of youth, the average age is 19, and awesome responsibility.
The Nimitz-class aircraft carrier is the most powerful weapon ever designed. With our 60 to 70 strike aircraft, those aircraft would go out, apply their 500, 1,000, or 2,000-pound bombs, recover, reload, refuel, relaunch, and go do it again and again and again, and there's nothing like it.
Rear Admiral Peter Daly, one of the crew members featured in the PBS series Carrier, Life Aboard the USS Nimitz. Filmmakers followed 24 men and women, including newly enlisted sailors, long-serving chiefs, and fighter pilots, to get a glimpse of the monotony, intensity, and expectations aboard this vast island of steel. Today we're going to hear some of those stories. Later in the hour, California Supreme Court overturns a voter referendum and legalizes gay marriage. But first, if you've seen the series and have questions, give us a call. If you've served on an aircraft carrier, call and tell us what surprised and especially interested you about life on an ocean-going airbase. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can tell us your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with Mauro Chermayeff, executive producer and director of Carrier. She spent 6 months aboard the Nimitz to film the series and joins us now from NPR's Bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you for having me. It's really great to be still talking about this show after the premiere and preparing for its rebroadcast in June.
And I know you had to have done a lot of research before you ever went aboard, but given that, what was the most interesting thing you learned aboard the Nimitz?
I think the most interesting thing for me and remains the focal point of the series is in fact, the people. I think I really didn't have a sense as a civilian without military family connections. And I just didn't really realize who was out there for all of us and how diverse the community aboard an aircraft carrier and how diverse the community in the Navy really is. You know, it's very interesting when you get there, because I think as an outsider, you think of the military community as one like mind, one set of people, and you very much connect what they're doing to what's going on politically or historically at any time. In this case, you know, the rather controversial Iraq War. So it was really interesting to see how different everybody was and how many people felt very differently about the very shared mission that they all are carrying out on a daily basis.
And one of the things that quickly becomes evident as you watch the series, you're not just following the admirals and the captains and the fighter pilots. You're down on the deck talking with the people who haul cable and down in the kitchens with the people who cook the food.
Yeah, correct. I mean, that was always a very, very important part of what we wanted to do, was to spend most of our time, I'll say, with the enlisted. And, you know, of course, the pilots are fantastic, and you'll get a chance to talk to Lori today. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that job is absolutely awesome, and it takes an incredible kind of individual to be able to be a pilot, and they're great. I mean, it's like Top Gun. It's not really that different. But, you know, and of course, there's wonderful people in the upper leadership. And controversial people in the upper leadership. But it's really, for us, it was really all about the younger people and people that we felt hadn't really had their stories told. And the very interesting thing was that the Navy felt the same way. And you can imagine when we pitched the project, it was hard to get the level of access that we got on the series. But part of it was because we were on the same page, which was, let's tell some of those stories that have not been told.
Well, one of those sailors you profile is with us here in Studio 3A in Washington, Chris Altus, a former U.S. Navy serviceman on USS Nimitz, featured in the series. Nice to have you with us on the program today.
Thanks for being here.
And what was your job exactly on the Nimitz?
I was an aviation ordnanceman. I worked on the flight deck with the VFA-14. I had two different jobs, actually. My job was initially with the squadron, loading and uploading ordnance. And then my second job was with the CAG, Air Wing 11, making sure that the ordnance was armed and de-armed as it went off deck and came back.
And some of those terms, some people may find a little confusing. A CAG, for example, the chief of the air group, which I guess is an obsolete term, but it's always still applied to the guy in charge. And when you were working with VF, that's a fighter squadron.
Correct. Yeah, they just switched from Tomcat to F-18 Super Hornets as I came into the Navy. And
when you're talking about ordnance, you're talking about 2,000-pound bombs and missiles.
Exactly. Everything has to do with the guns, missiles, weapons, you know, rockets in general.
And what did you think the first time you were up on that deck and watched all those people doing all of those different jobs? And there are people in red shirts, and you would have been one of those, and there would have people in green shirts. And I'm always told you never want to meet the baked potato people, the people in the aluminum foil suits. They handle fires.
Yeah, that was that. The aluminum foil people were the crash people, but everyone up there, you know, has a job to do, and you know, you hope that, you know, it works, you know, and everyone does their own job and makes it happen. So,
did you ever think it would make sense to you when you looked at it for the first time?
No, it's control chaos up there. That's just it, control chaos.
Mm-hmm. What was your impression as you looked at the series?
I thought, you know, great things of it. As it was going on, you know, I knew what they were there to do, you know, to, you know, follow the stories, you know, the people that, you know, make the ship work. And my impressions on the series were just absolutely wonderful. I think they did a great job, and I've had a lot of great feedback about how well, you know, the story is told and how the ship works, and it's just awesome.
I bet, though, in the series, watching it on TV, you saw parts of the ship you never got to see when you served on it.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, they're living on the ship for 6 months and then seeing all the different stories and everything that everyone does. And, I mean, it puts it into perspective how big it actually is to make everything work.
Let's see if we can get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our guests are Maro Chermayoff, the director of the PBS series Carrier, and also with us one of the sailors, now a former sailor, that she portrayed in that film, Chris Altus. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And why don't we begin with Charlie? And Charlie's calling us from Oakland in California.
Hello, Neil.
Yes?
I wonder... whatever happened to the ordnance man, the sailor who was aimlessly wandering around the flight deck during a recovery operation and was called to the bridge?
And why don't we get an answer from that from Maro Chermayoff?
You're speaking of the young fellow who ran right across the flight deck,
and he was almost decapitated.
Yeah, you know, Chris could actually probably speak more directly. I think he was actually part of Chris's shop, but I mean, he made it safely from that moment. But that was a close call. Very, you know. Not good planning on his part to run apart across at that point, but I believe he's alive and well.
Chris, what happened to him?
He's okay. What happened is that was in the latter part of the deployment, and that's where we pull out of the Gulf and everyone thinks we're on the way home, and that's where complacency sets in, and just bad judgment on his part. There are a lot of signals on the back of the boat that give you the okay to cross. During a landing recovery, there's never usually a signal to cross. I've talked to him. He was in my shop. He was in my berthing. I don't know what he was thinking, but he just went running. And if he would have stopped to look, he wouldn't be alive today. It was that close. We got brought down to the shop to watch the tape, and he definitely was spoken to by the bridge. And no, definitely a close call, but he's okay. He made it.
Stern lecture and nothing more.
Very stern lecture. he may have even, I don't believe he lost any flight deck quals. Something of that nature can definitely keep you off the flight deck for a while. But I think the good part is he made it. As bad as the situation it was very scary, and we had a lot of talks about it. It's just the complacent part of the deployment, going home.
Okay, one more question. Are the filmmakers now shellbacks?
Yes, of course.
Shellbacks, of course, are so designated upon crossing the equator.
Yes, indeed.
Well,
and WOG Day, the infamous WOG Day, which occurs. And from our understanding, you know, in our time, you know, you see the subjects featured in our film, you know, sort of complaining like the good old bad old days are over. But I understand it used to be pretty much of like an 8-hour whacking in the early years. And now, you know, there's a lot of fun attached. There's a lot of like rabble rousing, and there was a very fun performance, a sort of a gong show performance, and all of these you get a whiff of in episode 7 of the series. But you know, when everything is sort of going on a clockwork, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, throughout an entire cruise, events such as WOG Day are very memorable. And for our crew, you know, it was just another wild day on the USS Nimitz.
Chris?
I think the film crew actually won the WOG Day talent show with the song they put on for the Nimitz.
It was stolen. Our prize was stolen.
Mauro, do we have that song available anywhere?
It's on our website at www.pbs.org. You can dial in and see the famous Nimitz O Nimitz song.
Nimitz.
Nimitz O Nimitz to the tune of...
It was
an original. It's an original piece by our associate producer, Josh Bennett.
Well,
written and performed.
Thanks very much for the call, Charlie.
It has some it has some foul language in it, which all shipmates approved of.
Which is why it's on the PBS website.
And not in the show.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, Chris, that's interesting is the number of bleeps that are in this film. Sailors, it turns out, curse like sailors.
Yeah, that's the stereotype. I mean, there was no regiment or thing we had to go through boot camp to where we talk like that. But it just, I don't know.
It just happens.
Stay with us.
That's why you should get the DVD. No bleeps on the DVD.
Stay with us, both of you. We're talking with Mauro Chermayeff, the director of the PBS series Carrier, Life Aboard the USS Nimitz, and with one of the sailors she profiles in that story, Chris Altus, who's since left the Navy and is here with us in Studio 3A. When we come back, we'll talk with U.S. Navy pilot Lori Coffey and take more of your calls. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about life aboard a Navy aircraft carrier. A television series about USS Nimitz is currently airing on PBS. You can check your local listings for times. And if you'd like to see photos of the Nimitz, the 24-story floating home of more than 5,000 men and women, you can check out our website at npr.org. The director of Carrier is with us. That's Mauro Chermayeff, as well as former U.S. Navy serviceman Chris Altus. If you have questions about the series, if you've lived on an aircraft carrier, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Conflicting emotions about serving in a time of war often come up in the Carrier series, and here are some views from some crew members.
Down the center, you teach them.
It would be hard to not be patriotic and be in this job, because you do the president's bidding and the country's bidding. And so if you don't believe in what you're doing, I think it probably makes it pretty hard.
I think all of us have different opinions. I think not a lot of us discuss it. I'm trying to think, are we doing the right thing or are we doing the wrong thing? That's a personal struggle that I think anybody that does this, anybody that's over there pulling the trigger or doing that, has to ask themselves that question at some point.
Even though I'm not physically pushing the button and dropping the bombs, I am part of the circle. I was naive when I first joined. I never thought we'd go to war. Sometimes I was sure to join the Peace Corps.
Personally, I don't even get the war. Okay, the Twin Tower, I guess. If we're fighting back for that reason, yeah, I get it. But I don't get why we're fighting for somebody else's freedom when we barely have our own.
Several voices from the crew of the USS Nimitz talking about their role. The PBS television series follows 6 months aboard the supercarrier, 24 lives as they go on deployment to, among other places, the Persian Gulf. Joining us now is Lieutenant Lori Coffey, one of the Navy pilots featured in the series. She joins us from the Naval Air Station in El Centro, California. Nice to have you on the program with us today.
Nice to be here.
And Lori, in the series, you're an F/A-18 pilot for Strike Fighter Squadron 94, also known as the Hobos. And first of all, congratulations. It's not easy for anybody to get into that position. But what's it like being the only female in what one colleague described as a sea of testosterone?
You know, the whole ship is kind of like that. I think probably about 10% of the manning is women on the ship. So you're surrounded by men everywhere. My squadron happened to be all men as well. But, I mean, they are your friends. They are your brothers. It's a really close-knit type family. So everyone has a really good working relationship with each other, and we get along really well.
It's also incredibly competitive to get one of those jobs. Do you feel that you had to be a little bit better than everybody else as a woman?
It's extremely competitive to get the job. I mean, you definitely have to do well throughout flight school to get the grades to get jets. But it's the type of personality that's attracted to this type of profession is the type A competitive personality. So I think we kind of all spur each other on. But it's a tough profession. But everyone that does it's very well qualified.
And one of the things we see in the film is very different worlds for officers and enlisted. I wonder, just as Chris said, there were parts of the ship he never saw until he saw the television series. Are there parts of the ship you never saw until you see the TV?
Oh, absolutely. There's different worlds as far as the air wing that's aboard the ship, and then, of course, the people that run the ship and the day-to-day operations, kind of two separate worlds. You know, I take off on and off the ship and go and do missions, but yet the daily undergoings of the ship are run by, you know, thousands of other people. So each one, you know, each one's little microcosms, and, you know, I too saw places that I hadn't seen as well. I mean, it's just enormous. So people you never meet, people you never see, you know, so.
Well, what's the relationship of a pilot with the people who take care of her plane?
It's very close. I was in charge of a division with about 60 people in it, the people that were responsible for the avionics and all the ordnance that goes on board the ship and installed on our aircraft. So I was in charge of them. I had people working for me. So on a day-to-day basis, I had contact with those young enlisted people as a division officer. So not only do I do my duties as a pilot and a flying status as well, I also run a division of, you know, about 60 people, young, 18 to 20, and then senior enlisted in their, you know, 30s, early 30s to 40s that work for me. So we have a good working relationship with the people that work on our aircraft every day, as we should.
Here's an email we got from Barry in Overland, Kansas. I was especially surprised by one fact in the series, the desire of aviators to drop their payloads and their disappointment when they didn't. Particularly, he writes, by the female aviator, not to be sexist, but I've expected her perhaps to be a little less gung-ho. I wonder if you could comment on that.
I think, you know, as every profession, everyone is... You know, you're trained to do a mission, and everyone hopes to go and execute their mission. Not that you know, dropping bombs and violent acts in that regard, but as far as being a participant in the war on terror, being a participant for those who need us on the ground, being there to help. We are in an ongoing conflict and war, and I think what you were hearing was an express of maybe disappointment and not being more able to help the people on the ground that we know are dying on a daily basis. So that was more as opposed to dropping weapons as is helping the people on the ground is where you heard the disappointment.
And I wonder, here's an email we got, another one, this one from Jamie in St. Louis. My husband and I really like the show Carrier, but we were amazed by how some of the people showed on the program had no idea what the ship's purpose was, what their mission was, or even how the ship ran. I understand this is not true for everybody, but the fact that they're going around the world representing the USA, they should have a good idea about the bigger picture of the ship's objective. Other than that, great music, camera work, and overall presentation. Thank you for spotlighting an unknown aspect of our military on the high seas. And I think as a pilot, Lieutenant Coffey, you would have a pretty good idea of the ship's mission.
Absolutely, on a daily basis. Much of what you have to remember, much of what we do on a daily basis is on a secret level. Only very few people are actually briefed into the missions that we're going on and off the ship to do on a daily basis. So absolutely, that young sailor that works on the deck has absolutely no idea what we're doing, as it should be. But, you know, our mission is, you know, the general mission everyone is appraised of, but, you know, much like a corporation, the CEO has far more knowledge than the person working the stockroom. And, you know, the captain of the ship is all-knowing, and he disperses knowledge to those who need to know it, and that's kind of how we operate.
Chris, is that right?
Yeah, so that's correct. I woke up every day and got a flight schedule, and I had the numbers on the jets and what needed to be loaded on them. And
but where they were going and why?
Nothing. I did my job as far as loading and making sure when the pilots got in the cockseat that, you know, they were going to be able to use their ordnance and it would come off. And that was it. That was my job only. I didn't know where they were going. Just every day, the same thing, just load and upload.
Let's get a caller in from St. Louis. Pat's with us.
Yes, I loved your series, Carrier. I couldn't wait until it came on. I thought everything was just great. I loved how you showed I'm going to call them rituals, when a leave came where all, maybe it was called a squadron or something, I'm not sure, they all got the same color shirts and suits and kind of the background things like that. I just loved. One thing I was so thankful for is at the end where the one sailor is showing his son how to send off a plane, is that you actually told what all those signals meant. And to me, it was just not only something that they do, but a real sign of respect. Salute, you know, tell them to go. It was just an inside look of something that I'll never be able to see. And whoever chose the music was right on. Thank you so very much.
Mara Chermayoff, I guess that one's to you.
Yeah, you know, I feel that one of the great things that happens in the series is that, you know, the Carrier is an awesome environment. It really is. And it isn't a world that a lot of people necessarily get to see, and certainly get to see at this intricate level, because this is an all-access, you know, we had a 17-member crew aboard for the entire cruise of 6 months. But it's really, you know, the people element and the fact that we're following people's very personal lives and personal stories with this amazing backdrop, I think, is what brings the series full circle, because, you know, you're learning all about everything that's out there, but you're really learning about people, and you're really coming to understand what they're doing, care about what they're doing, agree, disagree. I mean, as a viewer, form your own opinion, but you're doing it through the lives of people you come to really care about. And I always think that's a great way to understand the world.
May I ask one question in regards to that?
Go ahead, please.
I thought that there was a real division, not only physically, but just as far as backgrounds went. When you got to the younger guys, it just seemed to me that there was a lot of influence put on their upbringing and what kind of life they had, what kind of made them take this route to get someplace better than what they were. And then there was a totally different, which I know it should be, a different division in the elite, the fighter pilots, the you know, the officers and things like that. And I was just wondering, there has to be a middle there. I'm right, aren't I? I mean, just an average Joe who...
Yes, and you know, and if you, and I think that when we look at certain subjects that are followed in the show, I mean, if you think of somebody like Christian Garzón, who, you know, post 9/11 had a real response of wanting to join. He was from a middle class family. You know, he came on as an undesignated airman. I mean, there are many subjects, you know, featured in the show who came to the Navy for different reasons. I did find it really interesting. I mean, we did not, you know, go around and find people with these incredibly unique backgrounds. It was amazing in the enlisted group how different people were and how extreme some of their life situations were that prompted them to join the Navy. I mean, Randy Brock, a featured featured subject in the show. You know, he was abandoned at a carnival as a child. You know, Shanika had a very, very tough background growing up with her mother, unfortunately, in prostitution at the time. I mean, these were people's true stories, and they are not stories of kids who necessarily have the means or the way to get themselves to college or those kinds of opportunities. And so the Navy was really providing them a leg up. And if you know how to make it work for you in the Navy, and not everybody does, it's not for everybody. But if you do, you know, the Navy is there for you. But that's not the same as someone who would, you know, graduate from a high school and head to Annapolis, or who had a long history of family in the Navy, or do ROTC in their college experience. And you'll find that people who enter at officer level, you know, they are pretty much coming from different backgrounds. But there were some wonderful pilots, including Dave Fravor, skipper of the Black Aces, who's a subject in the film, who was prior enlisted. And Kevin, who was in the squadron with Laurie, who actually now has just made command and will go on to be the skipper of a squadron. Mm-hmm. You know, he also began as an enlisted. So you'll find a real mix of backgrounds and opportunities and what people are able to achieve with their opportunities, because it's always what you make of it.
It was wonderful.
Thank you so much.
To your next project.
Okay. Well, it's coming from PBS, so keep your eyes and ears aware for 2010 for another series from PBS.
Mauro Chermayoff is the director of the PBS series Character, also with Carrier. Also with us, Chris Altus, who was a seaman aboard the USS Nimitz, one of the people featured in the film. And also with us, Lieutenant Laurie Coffey, a U.S. Navy pilot who serves aboard the USS Nimitz. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let me ask you, Mauro Chermayoff, some people are going to say that this film is a recruiting poster for the United States Navy.
You know, if you really watch the series, it's not. What I'm actually proud of is that it's pretty even-handed, because there are a lot of people who watch the series, you know, who are, you know, very pro-Navy or more on what would be classified as, you know, the right side of the spectrum politically, who can't believe some of the things that you show and that people are saying and that people are speaking so freely. And I think I think there's some things that happen that are very challenging, and you know, it's not the direction that the Navy would take if they were, you know, managing their own PR. But I think over the end of the whole series, the leadership of the Navy came to feel that it represented them well and fairly, and that people could make their own judgment. But the thing that I really I've always felt when I went into directing it and when I started to talk to them was that I felt that if people saw things not just from one perspective. I mean, if you look at a recruitment ad or an ad for the Navy, that there's no dark sides to that story. They are showing you a 100% positive, join the Navy, see the world. This series is not doing that. It's showing you the real ups and downs. And I think ultimately by seeing that, by seeing the good with the bad, the challenging with the heroic, you ultimately come out forming your own viewpoints about not only this time in history, but also, you know, rethinking how you feel about the people and finding a way to connect with them. I think it's really important to separate a mission and a political agenda from the people who serve, and to find a way to connect to them and to understand who they are. And like all people, it's not all good and it's not all bad. It's a gray world we're living in.
Let's see if we get one last caller in. Brett is with us, calling from Denver, Colorado.
Hey. Great show. Brought back some good memories. I was on the Enterprise from 78 to 82. One memory it brought back for me was one morning I was on watch, and when the sun came up, the ocean was so flat it looked like a mirror. There's no waves at all. But the funny story is, if you're ever on a mess deck, you know how very noisy they are. And one afternoon I was eating lunch, and this quiet came across the mess deck, and everybody's looking around to see what's going on. And all of a sudden we noticed three people there. It turned out to be a film crew from Sweden. And there's these two drop-dead gorgeous blondes. One was in a pair of leather pants, skin tight, and one had a black leather miniskirt on. And that quiet probably lasted maybe 15 seconds. And then you can just imagine what came out of the mouth. And I'd like to think the ladies were flattered, but I knew they were probably scared to death.
I think all of the members of the Nimitz crew, I think, will thank me now for not wearing a black leather miniskirt. It would not suit me.
Brett.
No.
Well, after that, they were in flight deck suits. So,
thanks very much for the call, Brett. Before we let you guys go, Chris, how's the baby?
The baby's doing fine. She's 2.5 years old. She'll be 3 in November. She's healthy. You know, she's smart. She's grown up. I'm actually going to get the chance to go see her here at the end of May. And like I said, I get out there whenever I can. I moved out of California. I live in Northern Virginia now. So whenever I get the chance off work, I definitely make time to go out and see her and hang out for a couple weeks. But she's doing great. And Tanya's a great mother, and she's taking good care of her. And everything's great on that aspect. So.
Well, Chris Altus, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
And good luck to all of you. We'd also like to thank Lieutenant Lori Coffey, who joined us from Naval Air Station El Centro in California. Good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate the time. And Mauro Chermayev, who's the director and executive producer of the PBS series Carrier, I'll get that right, joined us from our bureau in New York. Thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And when we come back, we're going to be talking about a Supreme Court ruling by the state Supreme Court in California today that overturned the state's ban on same-sex marriages. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.